Welcome to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Some Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin with a reading from USA Today Sports Weekly that reads, Three Keys to the College Football Playoff National Title Game, and this feature written by Paul Meyerberg of USA Today. Notre Dame, perhaps the sport's defining program, fresh off of college football playoff wins against Indiana, Georgia, and Penn State. Ohio State, another heavyweight, which has responded brilliantly to another loss to Michigan to end its regular season. The Fighting Irish needed some help from Penn State to win 27-24 in the Orange Bowl. Down 10-0 late in the first half and 24-17 in the fourth quarter, Notre Dame tied the game on a 54-yard touchdown pass with under 5 minutes to play, and then took advantage of a costly interception by Drew Allar to hit the go-ahead field goal with 7 seconds remaining. After rolling over Tennessee and Oregon, the Ohio State Buckeyes' 28-14 win against Texas in the Cotton Bowl was not put away until an interception by safety Caleb Downs late in the fourth quarter. Despite the unclean performance, Ohio State will be the favorite against the Irish. Another source of pregame hype comes from the conclusion of the debut 12-team playoff format. While the new format has come under scrutiny for the selection and seeding process, the tournament has yielded a marquee matchup to decide the national championship. In other words, the playoff has been a success. Here are the keys and biggest storylines leading into the matchup. First, which Riley Leonard shows up? For a time in last week's Orange Bowl, Leonard was in line to shoulder the blame for a painful loss. His costly interception 5 minutes into the fourth quarter allowed the Nittany Lions to take a touchdown lead, though Leonard's scoring pass to Jaden Greathouse on the ensuing possession evened the score. That was one of two turnovers on the night for Leonard, who entered the Orange Bowl with only 6 interceptions in 349 pass attempts. Overall, he completed 15 of 23 throws for 223 yards and a score, and added 35 yards on the ground, easily outplaying Allar. The Irish will need more of the same from Leonard and then some against Ohio State, only without the giveaways, since feeding the Buckeyes additional possessions is the easiest way to ensure a Notre Dame loss. Crucially, Leonard will have to be a hammer on third down. He's converted on 11 of 13 third down opportunities when the Irish need 3 or fewer yards. Given how Notre Dame typically struggles to find explosive plays downfield, extending drives on manageable third down tries will be one of the biggest keys of the game. Next question, who can stop Ohio State? Not Tennessee, not Oregon, not Texas. Another win against the SEC makes this surge to the championship game even sweeter for the Buckeyes. The Cotton Bowl win showed why Ohio State is so dangerous. While the offense was unable to get Jeremiah Smith involved, the defense forced 2 turnovers and held the Longhorns to 58 yards rushing and a combined 6 of 18 on third and fourth down. This group also delivered the game's defining moment. Down by a touchdown, Texas had first and goal at the Buckeye 1 yard line with 4 minutes to play. After the Longhorns stumbled back 7 yards on 3 plays, Quinn Ewers was sacked and stripped of the football by Ohio State defensive end Jack Sawyer, who scooped up the loose ball and went 83 yards for a score. It won't take perfection for Notre Dame to beat the Buckeyes, but it may take something close to perfect, especially if the Ohio State defense keeps this up while the passing game gets back in rhythm. Next question, can the Notre Dame defense stop the run? The run defense hasn't necessarily been an issue all season. While the Irish rank 41st nationally in rushing yards allowed per game, that total is inflated by 2 games against service academies. Navy and Army ran for a combined 429 yards, but lost by a combined 72 points. But the run defense really struggled out of the gate against Penn State. After giving up a combined 125 yards against the Hoosiers and the Bulldogs, the Irish gave up 141 rushing yards to the Nittany Lions in the first half. That area improved dramatically in the second half, though. Ohio State presents a different type of threat than the Nittany Lions duo of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. The Buckeyes are less likely to make the running game the primary focus of the offense, but are more explosive. See Travion Henderson's 75-yard score late in the first half against the Longhorns as one great example. It's no coincidence that Notre Dame's closest games, Texas A&M, Northern Illinois, Louisville, and Penn State, have come when the opponent is successful running the ball. But one thing to keep in mind if this game comes down to which team can convert on third down. While Leonard and the Irish have been very good on short yardage downs, Notre Dame's defense has been very solid in the same situation. Opponents have just 19 first downs on 42 carries when facing third down in 3 or fewer yards. And again, that feature is entitled 3 Keys to College Football Playoff National Title Game, written by Paul Meyerberg of USA Today. And in other college football news, the next feature is entitled Ohio State, a Win Away from Rewriting the Narrative. And this feature, written by Dan Wolken, columnist for USA Today, Dateline, Arlington, Texas. Quinn Ewers was drifting left, looking towards the goal line, his eyes locked on Texas's last chance. There was no time to peek back at which defensive monster was bearing down on him from the blind side, but he already knew it was Jack Sawyer. Of course it was. For 4 months in the fall of 2021, they had been roommates at Ohio State. They had been close. Now here they were, physically closer than ever, but emotionally separated by jerseys and traumas and the chance for redemption that only one would be able to cash in. This breathtaking college football playoff had placed these two teams and these two players in a moment that only sports can create. Even among friends, there can only be one winner. It was one play within a 60-minute game, within a month of postseason football, within a 16-game season, within years of colliding narratives about coaching decisions and reputations and what it means to be burdened by a specific kind of failure. And it was everything. This time, it was Sawyer ripping the ball away, rumbling 83 yards down the sideline, an Ohio kid clinching the Buckeyes' spot in the title game when they were left for dead in December. "We heard a lot of things," he said, "and we kept swinging," unquote. And this time it was Ewers on his stomach, a Texas kid watching helplessly as a national semifinal slipped away for a second year in a row. This time it was Ohio State 28, Texas 14. "It sucks," Ewers said. "He's a great player, great individual, great person. So you know it sucks," unquote. They did not award a national championship here last Friday night, even though it kind of seemed like it. That will happen on January the 20th in Atlanta when the Buckeyes face Notre Dame in another matchup of mega brands and storylines deserving of its own due. But now, in this sport, there are no coronations. Every step towards a championship feels like an epic, and every failure a cataclysm. Ohio State could not have won this game and cannot win a national title without unloading an unimaginable amount of emotional baggage. And Texas could not have lost it without wounds getting picked at until they bled. A year ago, Ewers had a ball in the air that would have sent the Longhorns to the championship game. It was never caught, and everyone in the program vowed to come back and make it right. And here, in this very same building, Ohio State had to suffer the indignity of losing a meaningless Cotton Bowl to Missouri, while Michigan, the program that had lodged itself in the Buckeyes' collective heads, went on to win the title a handful of days later. Quote, "No great accomplishments are ever achieved without going through adversity," Ohio State head coach Ryan Day said. "That's just the truth. And we've gone through our share of adversity, and that's life," unquote. You can thumb your nose, if you want, at the notion of adversity for a coach who makes $10 million a year and a roster of elite athletes collectively making $20 million playing a game that many of them will go on to make their careers. But this is what they do. This is the world in which they live. And it can be cruel. It can hurt, especially when the narrative that they have failed feeds on itself year after year after year. "Football is not meant to be easy," Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian said. "It's a tough sport. It's physically grueling. It's mentally grueling. But I wouldn't have changed it for the world," unquote. Sarkisian, too, knows what it's like to be the avatar of a football-mad state's expectations and the subject of its ire. Or at least he will now. 3 plays before the collision between Sawyer and Ewers, Texas had the ball in first and goal at the 1-yard line. The clock had ticked under 4 minutes to play. Ohio State had taken a 21-14 lead moments earlier, but Texas was on the doorstep, ready to surely tie the game. The Buckeyes' defense looked gassed. "We talked before the game about how do you leave a legacy," Day said, but it wasn't only Ohio State's legacy on the line. At that very moment, it felt like any outcome was possible. On first down, Texas couldn't stuff the ball into the end zone by running inside. Ohio State had brought in its biggest defensive personnel, daring the Longhorns to take the ball to the perimeter.
Then Sarkisian, who had called a near-perfect second half to get Texas in the position to win, made the most consequential play call of the entire college football season. Quote, "We didn't get much movement at all, and we had a plan to try to get the ball on the edge," Sarkisian said. "I can't quite tell where it got leaky, but you know, it's one of those plays that if you block it right, you get in the end zone. And we didn't," unquote. Not even close. Texas' pitch to running back Kentravion Wisner didn't just go nowhere, it went 7 yards backward. In the blink of an eye, Texas had gone from a few feet away from tying the game to a desperate situation with only 2 plays to score. Time was running out, nearing the 2-minute mark. This was all the Longhorns really had left. And then Sawyer straight up took it from them. Disaster. That is the burden Texas and Coach Sarkisian will carry the next time they arrive at this stage. And it's the burden that Ohio State has never been closer to shedding forever. What means the most to me is that we're going to compete for a national championship now, which is something I've always dreamed of bringing back to Columbus since I was a kid throwing the football in the backyard with my dad and an Ohio State jersey on, unquote, Sawyer said. And I was fortunate to make a big-time play like a lot of guys did all night long. Now all that's left is one more game to wash away the stench of disappointment that they've had to live in after 4 straight season-defining losses to Michigan. 60 more minutes to never have to hear that Day is overmatched and intimidated by the chair he sits in, even if it was never really true. Just a few more days to hear about what hasn't been done and celebrate what they did. But they have to win. There's no other option. "We've got to finish this thing, and they know it," Day said. It's better that it happened the way that it did in this game. In its first 2 playoff games, Ohio State cruised to wins over Tennessee and No. 1 seed Oregon, looking like an unstoppable juggernaut on its way to a coronation. But that's not reality in a sport of tiny margins at the highest level. In the end, it's the tension and performing with the excruciating pressure of the stakes hanging over your head that ultimately validates you as much as the trophy. It's really a one-and-done mentally. It's adopting what the basketball guys have in the NCAA tournament, offensive coordinator Chip Kelly said. "You've made the tournament, now survive and advance." And that's our mindset. We knew after the Michigan loss that everything was ahead of us, unquote. What's truly on the horizon, though, is always vague. When the teams are this good and there's so much on the line, the moment doesn't present itself until you can literally feel it breathing down your neck. "I thought I was going to be able to get the ball off," Ewers said. "Obviously, you know, it's not like I tried to give him the game," unquote. Instead, Sawyer took it to the end zone, to Atlanta for one more game, and maybe to history. And again, that feature entitled "Ohio State, One Win Away from Rewriting the Narrative," written by Dan Wolkin, columnist for USA Today. And in another feature on the national championship game, headline reads, "When you think the Irish are on fumes, they flourish," written by Tom Noy, columnist for the South Bend, Indiana Tribune, dateline Miami Gardens, Florida. Leave it to the old guy to look around the locker room to take the collective temperature of a program that he's given everything to for 6 stressful seasons, and realized that something special awaited this Notre Dame football team on this college football playoff semifinal stage. The first half of last Thursday's game against Penn State did not go anywhere according to script for the Irish. They lost their starting left tackle in Anthony Knapp. They lost their starting right guard in Rocco Spindler. They lost quarterback Riley Leonard after a big hit in favor of backup Steve Angeli, whose one series helped energize the entire room. For the first time this season, Notre Dame trailed by as many as 10 points. It was down by 7 at halftime. But as linebacker and captain Jack Kaiser surveyed the halftime scene, he knew something was up. Something that would end with a Mitch Jeter field goal in the closing seconds and a 27-24 Irish win. We should have known it too. You looked at these guys in the locker room, Kaiser said. There was never a doubt that we weren't going to compete, unquote. Kaiser saw a look in the eyes of the offensive linemen. The Irish were getting the ball to start the second half, and they were going down that field and scoring to start the second half. They did. He knew that there would be more than two quarters left to be played in this season that will seemingly never end. He knew that Notre Dame was right where it wanted to be, where it needed to be, where it longed to be, where it belonged to be. Whatever the circumstances, guys step up to the challenge, unquote. In a tight game where it would be tested, where resolve was required, the Irish may not have had that fight for the first two quarters, but that didn't mean that it couldn't have it for the last two. A couple hours later, Kaiser stood with his back against an interior wall and again looked around the locker room. He saw pockets of celebrations pop up everywhere amid discarded athletic tape and empty Gatorade bottles. There were smiles. There was satisfaction. And after the intoxication of a 13th consecutive victory faded, there would be something else. One more game. For the first time since the year 2012, Notre Dame will play the last game of a college football season after advancing to the January 20th National Championship game in Atlanta. Go ahead and try to unpack this one. Watch this game again. Pause. Rewind. Push play. Scroll through your text messages. Any of them make sense? Any of this? Another college football playoff game, this one a national semifinal against Penn State at Hard Rock Stadium, and another college football playoff win for Notre Dame, who's now 14 wins, one loss. How? I don't know, said All-American safety Xavier Watts. It doesn't feel real. We kept fighting. We just didn't quit, unquote. It wasn't that Notre Dame won. Notre Dame has been doing that since September. This one was about the way the Irish won, with poise and perseverance. It played with a patience that the second Penn State offered an opening, they would pounce. They pounced. Late game interception, big drive, clutch field goal, ball game. Hello, Atlanta. Independence serves this game just fine, James Franklin. Quote, this is the playoffs. You've got to find that extra juice, that extra want-to, unquote, Watts said. We found that. We played to Notre Dame standards, said tailback Jeremiah Love. We played like the dogs that we are, unquote. Big dogs, right, J-Love? Dobermans, hungry Dobermans. Shoot, we ain't no little dogs, he said. We the big dogs. Penn State was the little dogs today. Little cats, whatever you call them, unquote. Call them a fourth Big Ten team that couldn't beat Notre Dame this season. Might there be a fifth? 8 days earlier and 800 miles to the west in New Orleans, Notre Dame won a meaningful January bowl for the first time in 31 seasons. 8 days later, Notre Dame won a second January bowl for the second time this month. This big-time bowl stuff isn't so hard. Does Ohio State care to take its chances against this Irish team, given its current condition? There is belief. There is confidence. Then there is Notre Dame. On a night when doubt could have dominated, it didn't. Determination did. This group feels that there's nobody they cannot beat, no obstacle they cannot clear, no challenge that cannot be accepted. They'll just find a way through it, over it, around it. Notre Dame may not know how it's going to get to the end, only that when the end arrives, it will be on the right side of that scoreboard. What's it like to have such a concrete, solid collection of confidence? Quote, it's trust beyond the knowing, Kaiser said. We didn't know what was going to happen tonight. It didn't look great, but you trust in one another and get the job done, unquote. Notre Dame needed a game like this where it looked on the brink of a breakdown, a game where the opposition pushed it around for stretches, a game where it had no choice but to, sorry, choose hard. Only then would Notre Dame show itself and learn more about itself. The Irish couldn't wait to be tested because they couldn't wait to deliver. They knew they would. They did. We, Kaiser said, can lean on each other when we need to. This team has battled through adversity all year, said wide receiver Jaden Greathouse. We've had different challenges and struggles, but we've been able to face them all, unquote. Because of that, Notre Dame football is one more game, four more quarters, and 60 more minutes away from doing what many insisted and often feared it might never again do. Not in this lifetime, anyway. Certainly not under this current college football playoff format. That the bowl record fell after 31 years was one step. Can a national championship drought that has existed for 36 years also go? You want to tell these Dobermans no? And again, that feature is entitled When You Think the Irish Are on Fumes, They Flourish, written by Tom Noah, columnist for the South Bend, Indiana Tribune. And in another feature on the college football playoff, this one's entitled After Its CFP Run, You Will Never Get the Irish in a Conference. And this feature written by Matt Hayes, a USA Today sports columnist, Dateline, Miami Gardens, Florida. You're never getting them in a conference now. No matter what happens with Notre Dame's magical college football playoff run, no matter where the improbable ride ends, this Irish team will go down as the one that secured the university's beloved independent model. If Notre Dame's thrilling last-second 27-24 victory last Thursday over Penn State in the CFP Orange Bowl semifinal wasn't enough, consider the reward for advancing to the national championship game, $20 million. Notre Dame, everyone, is playing with house money with one game remaining in the CFP. We have the pieces in place now, Notre Dame athletic director Pete Bavakwa told USA Today Sports. quote, "We have a long-term media rights deal with NBC, and it's no secret that the playoff expansion to 12 teams helps us. We feel good about where we are moving forward," unquote. Just how good? It doesn't matter if the playoff ends in another national title for the storied program. It has no impact on the most important takeaway from this postseason run. Notre Dame proved it could do what was, at best, a dream scenario of having its NBC cake and eating college football playoff pie, too. The shifting landscape of college football seemingly had Notre Dame in a no-win situation. Stay independent and trail the Big Ten and the SEC in revenue generation, or believe in the concept of finding the right coach and plan and reach every possible goal on the field, and bank a load of cash in the process. It was earlier this month when Penn State head coach James Franklin said, quote, "Everybody should be in a conference," unquote, a direct shot at Notre Dame and its long-standing independent status. But while college football moved forward this season with an expansion that left the Power Four and the three 16-team conferences and one 18-team conference, Notre Dame stood its ground. Now we know why. The win over Penn State generated a $6 million payout for Notre Dame from the CFP. The breakdown of the complete Irish postseason haul, $4 million for qualifying for the CFP, $4 million for reaching the quarterfinals, $6 million for reaching the semifinals, and $6 million for reaching the final. So when cornerback Christian Gray intercepted an errant throw from Penn State quarterback Drew Allar at the Penn State 42 with less than a minute to play to set up the eventual game-winning 41-yard field goal from Mitch Jeter, Notre Dame had its statement game as a strong, healthy independent and a mega payout. Notre Dame's TV deal with NBC is estimated to be worth $50 million annually. The CFP payout of $20 million moves Notre Dame to $70 million annually, nearly identical to the high-rent financial neighborhoods of SEC and Big Ten teams. Football bowl subdivision teams that play in conferences must share its CFP payouts with its conference, and SEC and Big Ten teams will earn an estimated $70 million each. If Notre Dame had joined either of those conferences, it would have had to share its NBC contract and college football playoff proceeds, or likely eliminate the NBC deal altogether. Now the Irish are standing tall and alone once again in the college football landscape. The bonus, they're one win away from their first national title since 1988. "These guys are just built different," said Notre Dame head coach Marcus Freeman. "This place is so special," unquote. Not long after the game, after they sang the Notre Dame fight song and celebrated beating another top five team in the CFP, Irish defensive coordinator Al Golden stood outside the locker room and tried to explain what just happened. This unthinkable season, which seemed lost in September with a home loss to Northern Illinois, now has the feel of destiny. Somehow, some way, Notre Dame was beaten up by Penn State in the first half and found a way to trail by only 7 points. Somehow, some way, after Penn State scored two fourth quarter touchdowns to take a 24-17 lead, the Irish found a way again. Whether it was the gutty play of quarterback Riley Leonard, briefly knocked out of the game late in the first half and was checked for a concussion, or the dynamic ability of forgotten wideout Jaden Greathouse, or a defense that kept getting big stops, including the interception by Gray that set up the game-winning drive. The ball nearly slipped out of Gray's hands as he went to the ground, but he carefully scooped and tucked it. Golden called a different defensive front and stunt on the interception and a different coverage. "Didn't play it all game," he said. "I don't want to say what it was, but we had to keep them guessing. We needed a stop, a big play. You make the call. Feel good about it. We get the pressure, and Christian just makes an unbelievable play. We find a way. It's happened over and over this season," unquote. Now there's one game left, one last dance with a group of players who haven't buckled in a win-or-walk scenario since the Week 2 loss to Northern Illinois. Because Notre Dame doesn't play in a conference, it doesn't play in a conference championship game to get an extra data point for the CFP selection committee. Another loss this season would have likely been fatal to its CFP hopes. Instead, the Irish are one win from their first national title since beating West Virginia in the 1989 Fiesta Bowl at the end of the 1988 season, since before the explosion of cable television's impact on the sport, before the CFP and the Bowl Championship Series and the Bowl Coalition and Bowl Alliance, all the way back to the days of backroom postseason deals when schools and conferences and bowls made decisions based on their best interests. And only after the games was a mythical national champion declared by an alphabet soup of news services. A win against Ohio State in the national championship game would be the final step in the season of the unthinkable. But the biggest win, the biggest statement, arrived in the Orange Bowl. Quote, "This has been a wonderful run," Bavakwa said. "We have the history, the tradition, and our independence. And we feel we have the best coach in college football," unquote. And again, that feature entitled, "After its CFP run, you will never get the Irish in a conference," written by Matt Hayes, USA Sports Network reporter. And in one more feature on the national championship game, the headline reads, "Lou Holtz knows how Dave felt on the Ohio State hot seat." This feature written by Rob Aller of the Columbus Dispatch. This time, Ryan Day will know exactly where Lou Holtz is after the game. The former Notre Dame football coach plans to be in Atlanta on January the 20th, siding with the Fighting Irish, who he predicts will defeat Ohio State to win the national championship. No surprise there. It would be traitorous for Holtz, who coached Notre Dame to its last national title in 1988, to pick against the Irish. Quote, "Notre Dame has great team chemistry, and their offensive and defensive line dominated everybody they played, including Georgia," unquote, Holtz said last Sunday, explaining some of his reasoning for picking his former team. He added that quarterback Riley Leonard has played well and tailback Jeremiah Love has been quote-unquote outstanding. As for his thoughts on Ohio State, if you were expecting Holtz to opine that Day and the Buckeyes are not tough enough, as he did before last season's Ohio State-Notre Dame game in South Bend, Indiana, well, he went the other way. Instead of snarking on Day, Holtz sympathized with him, sort of. The 88-year-old West Virginia native who grew up in East Liverpool, Ohio, knows what it means to be on the hot seat, as Day was early last month after losing to Michigan a fourth consecutive time. Holtz never had a losing record at Arkansas. The Razorbacks went 30 wins, 5 losses, 1 tie in his first 3 seasons, and 30 wins, 16 losses, 1 tie his last 4 seasons. But athletic director Frank Broyles fired him after the Hogs went 6-5 in the year 1983. 7 years earlier, Holtz had resigned from the New York Jets with 1 game remaining in the NFL season, having stumbled through a 3-win, 10-loss morass. Quote, God did not put Lou Holtz on the earth to coach in the pros, unquote, he said at his departure. Things even got a bit sticky for Holtz at Notre Dame, where he went 23 wins, 11 losses, and 1 tie over his last 3 seasons after going 31-5-1 the 3 previous seasons. He'd retired after the 1996 season, only to return to coaching at South Carolina in 1999. He retired again in 2004. Quote, one day you're drinking the wine, and the next day you're picking the grapes, unquote, Holtz said of the constant tug of war between being hailed as a hero and treated like hell. You have to stay in the present moment because you have an obligation to your players to give them every chance to win, he continued. What gives Notre Dame the best chance to win? When you look at it, Ohio State is the best team, Holtz said. They have an explosive offense, and their defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, has done a tremendous job. They're something like a 9-point favorite. However, in a 1-game, winner-take-all, anything can happen. I like Notre Dame's culture. They're very physical, but they have to keep it close by forcing Ohio State's offense off the field, unquote. Holtz is nothing if not an amateur psychologist, and his sense is that the Irish will win if they are within striking distance in the fourth quarter. That puts pressure on Ohio State, which is used to winning and winning big, he said. Ohio State is the better team, but I think Notre Dame finds a way to prevail. It's going to take a big effort, unquote. I pressed Holtz on his 2023 season comments about Ohio State lacking toughness. Having mastered the gift of gab, he reframed our conversation towards what he learned about Woody Hayes as the Buckeyes' defensive backs coach in 1968, when Ohio State won the national title after defeating USC 27-16 in the Rose Bowl. Quote, Woody had such a profound impact on me, Holtz said. He was a stern taskmaster, and I learned a great deal from him, unquote. The pupil witnessed the teacher do his best instruction job during the 1969 Rose Bowl. We beat Southern California and O.J. Simpson with 16 sophomores on our team, he said. We had great players, but there also was a sense of urgency and strong desire to win. Our purpose was to win a championship, and that team believed that it could win, unquote. Holtz went on to wax about what it took to win the 1988 national title at Notre Dame. You weren't going to win anything except if the team cares for each other and plays for each other, he said. Marcus Freeman has done a tremendous job, and Coach Day has made some good choices, hiring Chip Kelly. I also think that their defensive coordinator is vastly underrated," unquote. All that said, it still comes down to what else? Toughness. As much as Holtz has a reputation for funny one-liners, there is nothing humorous about what happens when the ball kicks off. Quote, "It's about the standards and expectations and demands of your players to understand it is a game of execution and everybody being tougher on your side," unquote, he said. Mr. Notre Dame chose his words more carefully this time, but thinks that the Fighting Irish have the edge over Ohio State because they're made of tougher stuff. It's up to the Buckeyes to prove him wrong, not that they're thinking back to what Holt said 15 months ago, or even what Day said during his post-game interview on September 23rd of 2023. After defeating Notre Dame 17-14 on a late touchdown, Day fired an emotional shot across Holtz's bow during a quick interview with the NBC sideline reporter. Quote, "I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now," Day said. "What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here," unquote. I asked Day on Sunday if he had spoken to Holt since then, either to confront or talk things out. His one-word answer, offered with a tiny smile and no elaboration, spoke volumes. Quote-unquote, no. Day did address his emotional post-game outburst generally, if not specifically. Quote, "Every game you're either trying to prove somebody right or prove somebody wrong," he said. "It doesn't matter when it is, and it will be the same thing in this game here," unquote. Quote, "Day has a tremendous amount of respect for Notre Dame and certainly for what Marcus has done there. They're a gritty group. They're a tough group," unquote. And again, that feature is entitled, "Lou Holtz Knows How Day Felt on the Ohio State Hot Seat," written by Rob Aller, writing for the Columbus Dispatch. And from college football news, let's turn now to some NFL news. Headline reads, Jared Goff. Detroit's most popular chant got its start in the last row at Ford Field, written by Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. Jared Kilpatrick wanted to do something special for his family, and when he surprised them with tickets to last year's playoff game at Ford Field between the Detroit Lions and the Los Angeles Rams, he had no idea how memorable it would become. A year ago, the Lions beat the Rams for their first postseason victory in 32 years. It was an electric atmosphere with many of the 66,367 fans in attendance cramming into Ford Field more than an hour before the game. And it gave rise to arguably the most famous chant in Detroit sports history. Jared Goff. Jared Goff. In the 12 months since, the chant has become ubiquitous, showing up at random times in random places. Airports, grocery stores, hockey games across the state, NFL games in other states, soccer games in other countries. This is the story of how the chant came to be, or one family's version of it at least. Tyler Kilpatrick, Jared's younger brother, admits that there's probably 100 or so guys in Detroit that can make a similar claim, and everyone in the Kilpatrick family acknowledges that there's no real way to prove that they first put the rhythm to yelling out Goff's name. But high atop the rafters that night in row 21, seats 6 through 11, at the very top of section 322, Tyler and another Kilpatrick brother, Colin, saw Goff's image appear on the video board as the Lions quarterback stood in the tunnel waiting to run out for pregame warmups. He started chanting Goff's name. Quote, "Every family, I think, has a little family lore, and this gets to be ours," unquote, Jared said. The Lions were well on their way to winning 12 games and their first division title in 2 decades last fall when Jared decided that he was going to splurge on tickets for the Lions' first ever playoff game at Ford Field. Jared is an emergency room doctor at Ascension Borges Hospital in Kalamazoo and assistant professor at Western Michigan's Stryker School of Medicine. The hospital pays overtime every 6 months, and knowing that he had that bonus check coming in January, he earmarked it for tickets. The oldest of 4 brothers in a sports-crazed family, some of Jared's fondest memories come from ball fields. He played basketball, soccer, and ran track growing up, and played soccer and ran track in college at Alma. Tyler played football at Rochester Adams and lacrosse at Albion, and currently coaches lacrosse at Stony Creek. Colin plays lacrosse at DePaul University in Indiana. And their other brother, Austin, swam and played soccer in high school. When they were young, they would go to Pistons games or Lions training camp practices, and always they would watch the Lions on TV. That's the kind of what we always did growing up, was a bunch of sports, especially with my dad, Jared said. He's been a big Lions fan and Detroit sports fan his whole life, and definitely brought that on me and all 3 of my brothers, unquote. Austin lives in New York and couldn't make the game on short notice, so Jared bought 6 tickets, one for him and his fiancée, Jess Harris, one for each of his parents, Jan and Mike, and one for Tyler and Colin. He called Tyler the day after Michigan's national championship game win over Washington to surprise him with the news, and told Colin a couple days after he returned to school at DePaul. With no car on campus, Colin took a bus back to Michigan that weekend for what became a 14-hour odyssey. A 30-minute bus stop in Dayton, Ohio, turned into a 7-hour layover for reasons Colin still can't explain. And he got to his parents' home in Rochester Hills, Michigan, somewhere around 2 a.m. On the day of the game, the family went for an early lunch at Renshaw Lounge in Clawson, then for drinks at McShane's Irish Pub in Detroit. They cheered for the hated Packers to beat the Cowboys in the day's afternoon game, so the Lions would have another home playoff game in the divisional round, then hopped the bar's first shuttle to Ford Field. 1 chant became 2, and 2 became 100, and by the end of the night, the chant was incessant. Tyler said some fans in Section 322 bought him beers as a thank you for starting the chant, and Jan said that at one point, Colin stopped to listen to the rest of the crowd chanting and said in amazement, "Everybody's doing it." It's honestly kind of cool that the Jared Goff chant was the one that took off, Colin said. It's kind of like a respectful way to tell Stafford that we got a new guy now. In a way, it's a bit of a diss, but it's also very cool for Jared Goff for him to hear that, hey, we're on your side. We're not with this guy who was here for 12 years. We're here with you, unquote. Goff completed 22 of 27 passes for 277 yards and 1 touchdown, and he said after the game the chant made me feel pretty good, and I don't think that I've ever experienced anything like that. It was pretty unbelievable, he said. The people here are special, man. I'm grateful, and I'm grateful for their support. And today, with the circumstances that were there, it meant a lot, and it was special, unquote. While some fans have tired of it in the past 12 months, the chant is still going strong at Lions games and elsewhere as the Lions wait to learn who they will host in the divisional round of this year's playoffs next weekend. Fans serenaded Goff with more chants of his name during the team's division-clinching win over the Minnesota Vikings, and the Kilpatricks have heard it at various other stops around the state. Jared was at a Grand Rapids Griffins game when the chant broke out, and Jess heard it at a Red Wings game. I joke with my family all the time that we should have found a way to get royalties on this thing, Tyler said. All of the Kilpatricks have told at least someone about the origins of the chant. Most of their friends believe them. It sounds just like Tyler, they say. And for those who don't, the Kilpatricks are fine with that, too. And again, that feature is entitled Jared Goff. Jared Goff. Detroit's most popular chant got its start in the last row at Ford Field, written by Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.